Hey, Captains, Logs, and Lightsabers listeners. Have you wanted to start your own podcast but were afraid it would be too difficult? With Zencastr, you don't have to worry. It's what we use each and every episode, and it couldn't be easier. Log in using your browser to start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video podcasts with your guests. You'll feel a sense of Zen, knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Also, the days of multiple software programs are over. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast all in one place and distribute to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations. Finally, you don't even have to worry about what you sound like when it comes to the post-production process. Zencastr makes you sound buttery smooth, automatically removing ums and ahs in your recording, removing the awkward pauses in conversations too. Set the right loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code CLLPOD and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences as we do for all of our podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
Captain's Logs.
Han Solo. I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Federation Starship Enterprise.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You're listening to Captain's Logs and Lightsabers, part of the Geek News Now podcast network.
Hey, welcome to Captain's Logs and Lightsabers. This is episode 35, and we are the podcast with Geek News Now that discusses both Star Trek and Star Wars in the same show. Typically, I'm joined by my co-host, Chris, but he is taking off, and we're going to record another episode very soon in the future. But I pulled from our GNN staffers for this episode. So I'm going to introduce you all to John Ambrose. He is a staff writer for GNN. How's it going, man?
Going great, man. Happy to be on.
Good, good. So I know this is not your first podcast appearance, of course, but it's the first time you've been on this show. I'm excited to have you, and I'm interested to see where this conversation goes because we'll kind of get into why I have you on. But first, we're going to talk about our exploits outside of Star Trek and Star Wars with How Did You Geek This Week? And I'm going to let you start.
You know, I geeked this week. I played some video games. I'm a huge baseball fan, so I picked up the newest version of MLB The Show. It's obviously The Show 24, and it's a pretty cool game. It's actually educational. I like what they did with this year and last year. They included the Negro League players, and you can follow Negro League storylines, and it's a real, like, informative, educational journey into the history of a select amount of Negro League players. Last year, you learned about Buck O'Neill and guys like Jackie Robinson and a couple other guys, and this year, you're learning about Josh Gibson and I forgot the other guy's name. I'm sorry. Oh, Rube Foster, who is a really good player. So it really just does shed light on what is an overlooked part of baseball history. So it's a lot of fun to play, and it's a lot of fun to learn about. So
yeah, I know here in Pittsburgh we really, really respect what the Homestead Grays did for baseball in this area. I know our Pirates always have a Homestead Grays night every single season. So it's good to see other projects, you know, bringing that up and talking about history that way.
Yeah, I think the Grays split time between Pittsburgh and DC because DC claims them too. The Nationals have a bunch of the Grays players in their Ring of Honor, and they sell a lot of Grays merchandise. So I don't know if it was a split, but yeah, it's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah. So do they ever do like farm teams and like get, you know, do you get to have that experience in those games?
Yeah, that's the road to the show.
Okay.
I create my own player and you get drafted and you go through the minor leagues and, you know, you work through the minors and then you eventually get called up to the team that drafted you.
Nice. So you...
go ahead.
So you don't really get to choose where you get drafted? It's just luck of the draw? Okay.
But I think it's more fun to just do the luck of the draw.
Sure, that's... I mean, if you're going to create... If you're going to start a career, why not do it the way everybody else actually does it, right? Right. All right. That's awesome. I have never played a baseball video game that I can recall. I guess, I don't think I've played a sports game since whenever they stopped making 2K football. Yeah. That's probably the last time I played anything sports related, but you know, that's not typically my thing.
I don't buy Madden anymore because Madden is just a $70 roster update.
So yeah.
I gave up on Madden probably about 10 years ago. The last copy of Madden I bought was for the Wii U. That's how long ago I bought Madden.
Man, are you disappointed with the closing down of the eShop?
Yeah, you know, I thought the Wii U was marketed poorly. I think I still play it. It's a great system. And if anyone can get it on the cheap, I would recommend picking one up. Even though the online capabilities are done, but it's still a lot of fun. The touchpad was a lot of fun. It was a great concept. It's just Nintendo didn't market it properly, so it didn't really sell, and its lifespan was short as a result. But especially with the PS4 and the Xbox One coming out right at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I think the Wii U could have really capitalized on the failure of the PS3. I mean, that was really not... It was a difficult system to develop for, I think. And I don't know, there were just a lot of issues with the PS3. I think the Wii U could have had its time to shine, but...
Yeah, and they didn't market it. People thought it was an extension of the Wii and it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And there was just a bunch of EA Sports had a partnership with Nintendo over it and then pulled out at the last minute. So all the other they didn't really have a third party library lined up for it. Mm-hmm. So it was a series of unfortunate events for the system, and it deserved a better fate than it got.
Yeah, at least they made up for it with the Switch, right? I mean, that's been quite a moneymaker for Nintendo, so.
Yeah, the Switch is really good, but I think Nintendo finally realized, though, that they have their own fans. They don't need to chase the quote-unquote gamer market.
Right.
They don't need... No one's going to... People are going to buy a Switch. No one's going to buy a Switch to play Call of Duty. I mean, you're going to buy a Switch to have, like, lighthearted fun. Maybe you're on the train to work. You'll get a couple of rounds of Kirby in. You know, it's not like the other game systems. So
right. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping whatever the next follow-up to the Switch is, that they at least introduce some of the, just some of the quality of life changes that that PS4 and Xbox Series X have been able to make with just having the solid state drive, the quick resume features. I mean, I almost didn't realize, you know, what it was like to live without those things. I mean, the ability to hop in and resume a game exactly where you left off on either console. You can leave games running in the background, do other, you know, go to other apps or games, and you still just pick up right where you left off because of what solid state drives are capable of and the hardware and everything, with just being able to significantly reduced load times is also a huge feature that I don't want to see and not be part of the future of consoles, no matter who makes them.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Nintendo themselves is going anywhere. They're going to continue to make consoles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, it would be nice to have some of the modern conventions that the new consoles, the current generation of consoles has.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, this is probably the longest we've talked about video games on this podcast, because Chris is not a gamer, so I usually don't get to, you know, have this type of conversation with him, because he just doesn't... It's just never been his thing, so I appreciate it.
Not a problem.
We're going to save what really the most recent thing I did this week was for when Chris and I record, so stay tuned for our next episode. But as far as my geeking this week, much like you, Ambrose, I... I am balls deep in a video game, but this is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is the second game in the trilogy of the Final Fantasy. It's the second game in the trilogy of Final Fantasy VII, really expanding the story. And yeah, I am on chapter 4, and I am making sure to do every little thing, every mini game, every challenge. Because, you know, that's just how I like the game, I guess. I don't know. it's just, for me, it's pure nostalgia with a lot of modern conventions and a lot of, you know, just, I like how they have blended the traditional turn-based Japanese RPG with more of an action RPG combat. You know, your primary physical attacks are real time, you know, but then your spells, your items, your special abilities, your team up moves, all of that stuff is turn based. And you have to, you know, you have to wait until you have basically you have enough energy to pull off one of these moves. It's a fun blend of, you know, new and classic RPG design. So yeah, are you a Final Fantasy guy at all, or?
I've never played Final Fantasy.
Okay. You know, for me, Final Fantasy VII was the entry point into the series for me, so I've always kind of had a special place. I think the cast of characters is just more, you know, it's a great group of characters that you get to control, and every single person has their own unique personality, and it really has been expanded in this remake series. So it's just it's the right way to do nostalgia, in my opinion.
Nice.
All right. So I think we are going to get into the real reason why I had you come in today. But first, I want to know a little bit more about how you got your start with GNN.
All right, my start with GNN started. You know, they sent out a thing over Facebook like they always do. I don't know what made me answer that ad over any of the other ads I've seen. But I did. And then I got a reply back from Dave Gramillion. And I submitted an article to Dave Furr and got the ball rolling. And 100 articles later, I'm still a part of it.
Yeah, 100 articles. That's pretty significant, right? I mean, how long that was 3 years, right?
Two and a half to three, yeah.
Okay, so I mean, you're averaging a little less than 2 articles a week, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, that's pretty impressive output, right? And yeah, and so what is your particular writing style? What is it that convinced Dave and Dave to bring you on as part of the writing legion?
I think my writing style, you've read it, my writing style is sardonic. It's truthful. I don't beat around the bush, which I see as a good thing, because a lot of people's style is to kind of say things but not say them directly, and I tend to be that guy that treads on the outside of the box and points things out. And if it's good, I'll give it its praises. And if it's bad, I'll eviscerate it. I think that served my particular writing style well. Whereas, you know, we have a lot of, and we have an excellent staff of writers, but some of our writers are pragmatic. They don't like to say if anything's good or bad. They just give you the straight dope. Some writers will be truthful in their own way, but they'll sugarcoat it.
Mm-hmm.
Some writers will look the other way when it's something they like, you know, which is understandable. I tend to just be truthful no matter what I'm writing about. And
yeah.
And you know, if my motto is, if everyone agrees with what you write, you're not doing your job.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. I mean, okay, so What has been your most viral article that you've written with GNN so far?
I don't know. I've had a couple. The mock interview I did with number 45 has gained some traction.
I know that was a little slow at first to build any kind of reaction other than what, one or two comments.
And then I had anything I write with Star Wars. You can't win with Star Wars.
Right. Like, right.
I could Jeff Bezos could die and leave me his fortune, and I could just write a glowing article about the Star Wars franchise and send every single Star Wars fan $100 bill, and they would complain that the bill was wrinkled. you can't win.
Yeah.
That's where most of the viral articles come from. And it's not even anything that's worth arguing about. The thing that I love about Star Wars fans and also hate is the attention to detail. Like, you'll write an article about the Sarlacc pit scene in Return of the Jedi, and someone will chime in and be like, "You were wrong. Lando is facing northwest, away from the sun. His blaster wasn't drawn, and Boba Fett came in southeast towards the sun." And you're just like, it was like a Royal Rumble match. I'm just trying to.
It's funny that you mentioned Royal Rumble, because since we're recording this on WrestleMania weekend, I tuned in for a little bit of the show yesterday, but I don't know. I just am past my wrestling era. I don't know. I just couldn't get into it.
I used to love wrestling, and then they got rid of like the gimmicks and what made it fun.
Right.
Like,
right.
Now it's like all serious. Like, you know, you used to have like clowns and people playing with snakes and the Road Warriors.
I mean, you kind of have that still with the New Day. They're kind of, you know, they're a bit of a, they're a small stable. More of a tag team, I guess. But yeah, they kind of got big for their antics, you know, both on the way to the ring, inside, you know, during the match. And yeah, it's kind of fun. Yeah, it's very, very tongue-in-cheek, you know, with, and they don't take it too seriously, which, you know, it's kind of, I guess it's a way that they're trying to capture the spirit of the Attitude Era, but without going, you know, full bore TVMA, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also find it hard to watch now, because we always knew that Vinnie Mac was not the best guy in the world, but there was still a lingering doubt. So we were willing to give the benefit to that doubt. And now that the door has been busted wide open, it's like, oh man, that's been him the whole time. Like, God, this is like cringeworthy now. This isn't fun.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I always had a feeling in the back of my mind, and this is just confirmed, that I always had a feeling that the Mr. McMahon persona that he adopted, you know, when he was on camera, was more in line with his actual self. You know, it wasn't really much of a caricature.
Yeah, but like I said, there was still that nugget of doubt.
Right,
it wasn't proven.
Right, right. Well, just
blown, you know. Now that it's been blown open, it's like, I really can't. I can't do this right now. Like, I can't watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's not directly, well, I don't know anymore. He wasn't directly involved with the day-to-day, then he was, and now he's not again. I don't know. I can't keep up with it, honestly. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, we could probably continue on this tangent if we really wanted to, but I don't think you're here for wrestling and video game discussions, so...
Is your guest. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Well, that's fair. That's fair.
Don't get technical with me.
Logic is the beginning of the wisdom of Maris, not the end.
A Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and event.
I actually do want to get started, because, you know, you had initially
talked about starting your a journey into watching Star Trek a couple weeks ago, you know, after you had appeared on an episode of the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast, right?
Yeah, he was doing a Spaces, and I did a quick talk with him on Twitter Spaces, which is a really nifty tool. You can just pick up and do it, and it's kind of interesting. You just have a conversation on a whim, and it's like a mini podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Me, him, and a couple other people had about a 15-minute talk, and you know, he was talking about Star Trek, and I really. There's no real reason why I didn't get into Star Trek, and I kind of am interested in watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons is because most people cite it as like, oh, you're a Star Wars fan, Star Wars fans hate Star Trek and vice versa and that and this and that. And that's not really the case, because I never really bought into that, because I never really cared what anyone else watched. I just watched what I loved. I think that the reason why I never got into it is I view Star Trek as something that is a generational thing. Like, I think a lot of it is passed down. Like, your parents watched it, so you watched it, and it's like a media heirloom.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of my parents were really into it. And, you know, no one in my family was really into it, so I never really gained interest in it.
And
that kind of is just, that's pretty much why I never really watched it.
Yeah. Now that, you know, I'm sure I've told this story way back in the early days of Captain's Logs and Lightsabers, but, you know, I kind of came to Trek on my own. My dad had, you know, watched TNG and Deep Space Nine in, you know, because they did a syndication model. You know, it wasn't ever on a specific network. It was, you know, it's just sold to syndication, and whatever station would run. Was it on UPN? I believe it was on UPN once that network had been established. But I think prior to that, you know, at least in 88, 89, whenever the first season of TNG aired, you know, they didn't have a network. They just, you know, of course, NBC wasn't going to agree to bring it back after they lost, you know, a bunch of money on the original series. I knew they didn't have, you know, they weren't going to take another chance on Star Trek. So I think syndication was the only way that Gene could really, you know, find a buyer for Star Trek. And it worked. So, I mean, Star Trek would have been really, you know, at least as, you know, on the TV medium, it would have been dead in the, you know, in the 60s whenever, well, yeah, it would have been dead in the 60s whenever the original series ended its 30-season run. You know, I mean, if not for the motion pictures, you know, I think Star Trek would have been completely forgotten to time. I don't know where we would be if we didn't have TNG, you know?
Well, and the problem with Star Trek as a television show wasn't Star Trek itself. The movies were always king back then, and television was seen as kind of a fad. It was seen as kind of, you know, a thing to do in your room to entertain when you had guests over or whatever. It wasn't the institution that it is today. So the shows were, until like the 70s, the shows were really kind of hokey, and no one really like, they were like these goofball comedies like Bewitched or you know, it was like Dick Van Dyke being like, oh, what would happen if I tripped over this ottoman, like, you know, and that's what TV was. It was that and the news and sports, and no one really cared. So when Star Trek came on, it was a good program. But it was TV, and no one really cared about TV.
Yeah, and then asking for your attention, you know, to an entire 40-some minute episode, you know, that wasn't joke after joke. It wasn't a sitcom format. It wasn't a comedy. You know, it was hard sci-fi. But I mean, it was relatable because, you know, shows, it was a Western in space is how it was pitched. And I just don't think that, I just don't think the general public latched onto it that way. I think they saw it as too heady, too cerebral.
Yeah, that could be true too.
I don't know. I mean,
Twilight Zone had.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, but Twilight Zone had a pretty good following, though. I mean, it certainly did better than Star Trek did.
Yeah, it did, but I think it was canceled a couple of times.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean. It really was the was Twilight Zone the first anthology series?
I got to think back. I don't, my TV history isn't what it used to be. Yeah, because I think it was before The Outer Limits.
Mm-hmm.
It was either Twilight Zone or Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Jeez. Yeah, yeah. I would say that probably started before Twilight Zone. I want to say that started in the 50s, where Twilight Zone was definitely a debut in the 60s. So
I'll check out Alfred Hitchcock Presents is on Roku channel now, so I'll check it out when I get off here.
Nice, nice. All right, so what... So you are deciding to go through and watch Star Trek, really, you know, take a seat and watch Star Trek for the first time in your life, and you're looking to tackle as much of it as you can. What, prior to this undertaking, what was your experience with Star Trek?
Very minimal. I had friends that watched it. I have friends that love it. They go to cons. I knew what a red shirt was, so I was in on that joke. Other than that, not really. Like, I get the cultural references that you can't really miss, like, you know, all the Spock references. But other than that, it was really, I'd maybe watched two or three episodes of my entire life. One of them I remember. All of them were Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them I remember, it was, what's that guy that's always crying online, his name?
Star Wars Theory?
Yeah. he played Wesley.
Oh, Will Wheaton.
He was in Stand By Me.
Yeah, Will Wheaton.
Yeah. There was one where there was like a thing where like they had a visor that like brainwashed people.
Okay.
And he had to like save the day. That was like that's the only episode I really actually remember.
It was like some sort of game, right? It was some sort of strategy game. And yeah, it ended up being a brainwashing tool or something. Yeah, yeah, I do remember that episode somewhat fondly. It was corny, it was cheesy, like much of, you know, TNG was in its early few seasons, but I want to say that was probably a season 2 or season 3 episode, if I had to guess. I can't remember offhand. Yeah, so had you seen any of the theatrical films?
No.
Okay, so you really are coming in with just the basic amount of knowledge that one can have about Star Trek, which is, I mean, I'm excited for you because I want to see, you know, looking at Star Trek as a middle-aged man for the first time. I'm interested to see what you take away from the experience. So where are you planning on starting?
The original series.
Okay. Okay.
I'm gonna go to the original series, and then I'm going to watch, after the original series, I've been told the two essential movies I need to watch are Star Trek the Motion Picture and Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Dave Gremillion is a huge Wrath of Khan fan. I know he watches the film at least once a year, I believe.
Yeah, so I'm going to check that out.
I mean, I think you should keep going. You know, yeah.
I've got like thousands upon thousands of hours of content to watch. So that's phase one, as Kevin Feige's hat would say. then we're gonna move on to phase two.
Why does everything have to be phases and multiverses now? Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a trope I'm getting over. But hey, it's not slowing down anytime soon because that's where the money is.
We keep buying it. You need to stop doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to say that I'm not at least partially to blame, because I do see every Marvel film in the theater. I know I've talked to you about the whole A-list thing. I would not see anywhere near as many films as I do in theater if it weren't for that. So, yeah, I probably wouldn't consume every single Marvel movie if I didn't essentially have an all-you-can-eat pass.
Here's the thing that boggles my mind about the box office. Like, if you're a fan of a sports team and the team is terrible, you don't go to the games. If you go to a restaurant and your meal is terrible, you don't go back to the restaurant. So why do people keep going to Marvel movies?
Because the general public has been conditioned to look at every Marvel film as an event. And I think with Phase 4, Phase 5, it's just been a disaster, to say the least, you know, as far as the fan reception. How do you fix it?
I think there needs to be some firings, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Not as long as the money keeps coming in. I mean, if there's another unsuccessful phase, perhaps there's a chance that there might be a leadership shakeup, but...
I mean, I think Kevin Feige and his hat should go separate ways. I think maybe send the hat to, like, Lucasfilm and fire Kathy Kennedy, and then Kevin Feige can run Marvel. His hat can run Lucasfilm. And maybe if they're separate, they'll do a better job.
I don't know. I keep hoping that they're I'm hoping that Deadpool is, you know, I'm hoping that Deadpool and Wolverine is the thing that brings people back to Marvel. It gives them a chance to basically reset everything, right? If they really wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, the opportunity is there.
The female Silver Surfer that was just announced?
I mean, to be fair, you know, that is a character that has existed in the comics. It's...
Yeah, yeah, I know, and I know that argument's going to come up whenever I bring it up, but that's not the character we want when we're doing a traditional Fantastic Four movie.
You know, yeah.
I mean, it's not. And I'm sorry, you can't convince me. It takes a lot of convincing to get me to believe that Pedro Pascal is the smartest man in the universe.
That is the one casting from this new film that I just don't think is right.
Like,
I mean,
I'd be sitting there as a script supervisor, be like, you don't know what any of this means, do you?
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do with this film. So, what, this supposedly the Fantastic Four film takes place in a different one of the Marvel universes, perhaps one that we saw in Multiverse of Madness or Spider-Man No Way Home, or, you know, I don't know where, you know, what I don't know what the pitch is for this film. And yeah, I just don't see Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards at all.
I still can't. It's almost like, hey, who should we get? Pedro Pascal. That's a terrible choice. You're fired. Okay, who should we get? I think Pedro Pascal is a good choice. Do you? No, that's terrible. I don't even think he's that smart. You're fired. Who thinks Pedro Pascal should be Mr. Fantastic? You? All right, you're in charge of the project.
Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so now, if I were Chris, I would tell you that after you watch the three seasons of the original series, that you should actually watch the animated series from the 70s. There were only two seasons, but it is meant to function as the fourth and fifth years of the 5-year mission that got cut short whenever whenever TOS got canceled after season 3. So I still think it's worth your while. I think it, you know, and I think it'll scratch that nostalgia itch for you because it's, you know, it's that 70s animation style that you just don't get anymore. That hand-drawn animation style that really blew up in the 70s. I think you'll enjoy it, actually. I think it's worth your time.
Sound good.
And it'll break up the you know, the live action, and, you know, you won't go straight from, you know, from live action television to a live action film. You'll have a little detour in between, which is nice. So what, all right, I'll give you the chance to turn the interview around and ask any questions you have before starting your journey.
Are there any lulls in the series? Like, does it get really boring?
I mean, there are certainly a lot of episodes in the original series that are a little hard to digest just because Gene Roddenberry relied heavily on the romantic period of literature, you know, and he was a fan of Shakespeare. So there, you know, a lot of the episodes have a Shakespearean feel to them. A lot of the episodes have a lot of connections, and, you know, sometimes the basis for an episode of Star Trek might have been related to the writings of William Blake.
Oh, okay.
You know, so if you're familiar with William Blake, if you're familiar with Shakespeare, I think you'll have a greater understanding and an appreciation for some of the early episodes because that's what Gene was into. I mean, there are some episodes that don't work, and I think that's true in any TV series where, you know, where they were operating under the 20 to 25 episode per season model. You know, you're going to have some episodes that just don't work. You're going to have, Star Trek is very famous for the concept of a ship in a bottle episode, you know, where, you know, if the budget wasn't there, or if they had, you know, if they had overextended the budget on a previous episode, they might really scale back one or two of the episodes that season. And it's going to be more of a character story. It's going to be limited sets, limited, you know, you might not even see an episode that takes place on a planet. It might just all take place on the ship, you know? So that's kind of always been Star Trek's thing. You know, sometimes they'll put a lot of time and the budget into some of the signature episodes, some of the ones that you've probably heard about just through general interaction with the geek community. I will be honest. It has been a very, very long time since I have watched the original series from start to finish. And I don't know if I ever gave, I don't feel like I gave every episode my undivided attention when I did watch it. So it's probably, for me, the original series is a blind spot. I'm much more familiar with TNG and Deep Space Nine. Enterprise, for certain. Enterprise and DS9 are my two absolute favorite Star Trek series, just because they weren't afraid to do something a little bit different. You know, Deep Space Nine was, for the most part, you know, it took place in one location. It took place on a space station. That there happened to be, you know, the first stable wormhole was discovered near this space station, you know, which opened up, you know, travel between two vastly distant quadrants of the galaxy. It was a bold choice. You know, it was something that really kind of shook up the Trek model that had been established with the original series and with TNG. You know, instead of traveling among the stars, the stars travel to Deep Space Nine. It's my favorite series because it wasn't afraid to be different. And then Enterprise, you know, say what you will about prequels, I didn't quite appreciate it the first time when it was on its initial run in in the UPN days, and then I believe at some point it went to the CW towards the end of Enterprise's 3-season run.
Maybe. I seem to remember who won the CW.
Yeah, yeah. And then it seems like the CW is going to go the way of the dinosaur here real soon.
Yeah, that is true. They're not looking too hot. They're not looking too hot.
No, no. I don't think people are watching those soapy teen dramas anymore. You know, it's... I don't know, I guess... I mean...
CW is something where, like... I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. Like, you could watch a show and be like, man, it looks like a CW show. You know, like, there's a certain quality to them that is not inherently good. And
yeah,
you're watching a show on TV and you're like, this has to be a CW show. Like, there's no way any other respectable network would have, like, this janky whatever this is and try to pass it off as a real show.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some okay shows that have made it, you know, that have been on the CW that have been okay. I mean,
four seasons of The Flash were good. Arrow was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like Supernatural. I mean, I think I've watched about 5 of the however many seasons there were. I hear towards the end it kind of gets a little not good, but I might eventually return to it. As weird as it was at times, I actually kind of dug Riverdale, which is a teen soapy dark dimension version of Archie comics.
Isn't it like Desperate Housewives with teenagers?
In a way, yeah, yeah. There was a lot, I mean, there was a lot of occult stuff that kind of got introduced in the first few seasons. Yeah, the first season was a pretty basic, it was a very basic murder mystery, set up. One of the characters, his body is found and murdered, and it's a very prominent member of the richest family in Riverdale. So that was kind of the jumping off point for the first season, and then it just got weird as hell. Like, the last season was a battle for heaven and hell. I don't even know, but I will say that I've seen a lot of TV shows end badly. I will say that of all of the TV that I've watched, from start to finish, I think they nailed the ending better than most other shows. You know, you always kind of expect when you watch a show, you always expect something other than what they deliver in the final episode. And this is the case with Riverdale. It was just, I think the way that they took their time to give every character an ending. It may not have been a good ending for the character, but every character that has ever been, that had ever appeared in the show got at least 5 minutes for their story to wrap up, which is something that a lot of TV doesn't do. You know, they don't always wrap up all the loose ends. People get left out, as far as, always wonder what happened to this character. Well, Riverdale actually gives you an answer for that, which in its final episode, which I really appreciated.
I think the one show I used to like, but I don't really add. The more I thought about it, the more I found it to be weird. Was Buffy?
Yeah,
because when she starts that show, she's like 15, and Angel is like 300, and there's got to be some sort of like moral quandary there, like. Laws being broken in that relationship.
I mean, it was a different time back then, right?
Like,
Yeah, I mean, in our post-Me Too world, that's probably a little icky. But, you know. I just, like,
having him over for dinner and being like, so what do you do? You know, I do odd jobs. So really? How old are you? 350.
Yeah, I don't know. I came to Buffy late. I really enjoyed it. I thought, I mean, it gave me a different side of, oh geez, why am I blanking on his name? Seth Green. Yeah, because he appeared on that show in at least the third and fourth seasons. And, you know, prior to Buffy, I had only really known Seth Green from Robot Chicken and Family Guy. So it was kind of, oh yeah, that's right. He was Dr. Evil's son, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But yes, Austin Powers, of course, I had seen all of those movies when they came out. Yeah, I don't know. It kind of gave me a different opinion of him. You know, he wasn't just the weird slapstick, you know, off the wall bonkers comedy style of both Robot Chicken and Family Guy, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So we really took quite a few detours. What was the original question? Oh, any episodes that were a little slow, right? That was the original question. Did I even?
Then my second question, you did answer that.
Okay.
My second question is that I absolutely hate J.J. Abrams. I don't think he has an original bone in his body. I think he has to watch his wife brush her teeth in the morning, so who knows what could be. So are the movies that he made necessary?
Are they necessary to understanding the 50-plus year history of Star Trek? No. They are essentially the jumping off point for the J.J. Abrams films, and it essentially created a split timeline, a split, you know. So yeah, they're completely unnecessary to mainstream television, theatrical, you know, films that feature the original cast, you know, William Shatner, Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, Nichelle Nichols, you know, that entire crew. Yeah, I don't think it's necessary at all. And if you wanted to watch everything else Trek before going to the Abrams verse, you won't be missing a damn thing. Except Carl Urban as Bones, I do think he's worth watching though, as Dr. McCoy.
Okay.
I do think at the very least Carl Urban is the best thing to happen to those films.
All right, fair enough.
So, yeah, but yeah, ultimately put that aside, get to it when you've watched everything else, or if you need a palate cleanser, you know, just something to break up, you know. You're probably going to be watching close to 400 episodes of television by the time you're done.
Yeah, that doesn't even include the movie.
Right. So, yeah, if you need a break, maybe put on the first one and see if you want to continue. I will say that Into Darkness is a misfire completely, but I really enjoyed Star Trek Beyond. It was different for, you know, from the rest of those films. You know, it really took chances, but I think that after Into Darkness, people were turned off of the Abrams films or the Abrams produced films at that point because he did not direct the Star Trek Beyond. Yeah, I just think the whole bait and switch with Into Darkness, you know, oh, this isn't Khan. We're kidding. This is Khan, you know. I just think it was a misfire.
We swear they're not dead, guys. They're totally not dead. They're dead, aren't they? No, they're not dead. They're not dead. No one's dead. And then the last episode, hey, yeah, they were all dead.
Well, I mean, that's J.J. Abrams for you, right? Because he had a big hand in that series.
Yeah, and it's like, we called it the first episode, and you sat there, and you were like a toddler. No, I didn't steal the cookie. I didn't steal the cookie. I had a delicious glass of milk. Okay, I stole a cookie. Can I have the milk?
Yeah. So, all right. Any other questions for me?
Nah, man. You guys covered it for me in the chat. I got a large turkey to carve here.
Well, I mean, you have some time on your hands because the other part of this journey that we didn't talk about is, you know, you had a pretty major knee surgery recently, and you're going to be, you know, resting for quite some time before you're ready to be 100% again. So that's the main reason why you're deciding to take this on now, right?
Right.
So let's wrap up with something that I know you talked about in our GNN chats. The whole concept of an old geek watches. Are you planning to do more with that than just watch Star Trek?
I'm planning on doing more with that because the more I go through like streaming services, the more like I've watched Twilight Zone, but I could add that into it. I've never watched Quantum Leap. There's enough content out there for me to do this as a serial set of articles where I can have a good amount of material. So yeah, it's something where, you know, I'm almost 40 and it might be when I can get on my two feet and edit and not be in the pain I'm in right now with my knee. It might be a small show as well, where I do some analysis, but it's going to be kind of like a column for GNN, Old Geek Watches, and obviously Star Trek will be the first one. Then, you know, I'm not just going to do Star Trek as a franchise. It'll be like Star Trek, the original series. Then I might take a break from that and be like Quantum Leap season one. And then I might bounce back and forth, do some movies here and there, and it'll be Martin Flight. And it'll be, I mean, it's an interesting concept I'm kicking around in my head.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here for it. I really, there are times where you and I do not see eye to eye with our opinions of certain things. And there are times where we do. I'm interested to see your unfiltered take on something that is really near and dear to both mine and Chris's hearts, you know, for different reasons, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
when I finish the original series, if you'll have me back on, I'll be happy to come on and talk about it with you
guys. Heck yeah, absolutely. This is what I'm hoping is just the first of many appearances for you.
Cool.
All right, so let's wrap this up. Tell the good people who actually spend time and listen to this stupid little show of mine. Tell them where we can find you, whether it's a writing assignment or whether it's one of your appearances on our many, many shows like MCU Mondays and the Cantina Happy Hour.
Okay, well, you can find me on Twitter at GeekNNAmbrose. You can also find me, my writing on geeknewsnow.net. I'm not really on any other podcasts right now. I've been busy. But yeah, those are the two places you can find me. So follow me on Twitter and follow me on the website.
All right. We will definitely include your Twitter link in the show notes. And is there a way where I can search just for your articles on GNN?
Yes, there's an authors page. So if you go to the website and you click authors, all the current writers have their own page.
Perfect. I will make sure that I link to that so that if somebody wants to catch up on your articles, they can do it in a one-stop shop.
Awesome, man.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on, Ambrose. I appreciate you taking the time to really, you know, kick off your journey into Star Trek with our show.
All right, man.
All right. So until you hear from us again, this has been Captain's Lovers. This was episode 35. We will be back very, very soon with Chris and I with our regular format. Yeah, hope you'll continue listening. Have a good night.
Well,